My name's Renee Giacchino. I'm corporate counsel for the Center for Individual Freedom. To learn more about my organization, visit our website at www.cfif.org, where I encourage you to sign up for the free Lunchtime Liberty Update. Well, a good friend of mine, a former co-worker, Marshall Manson, sent me an email about the next book that we're going to discuss. And he said, quote, "It's arguably the most important political book of the year," end quote. It is, in fact, a fascinating book. It's called Voting to Kill, How 9/11 Launched the Era of Republican Leadership. And joining us today is the author, Jim Garrity. Jim works in Turkey as a foreign correspondent for the National Review, the New York Sun, the Philadelphia Inquirer, and the Washington Times. Many of you may know him for his work as blogger extraordinaire during the 2004 election with a blog called, quote, "The Kerry Spot." Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon, Jim. Are you really over in Turkey?
Actually, at this moment, I'm in an even more strange and bizarre environment, the state of Connecticut.
Oh, I was going to say Washington, D.C., but...
No, it's a good guess. Thanks very much for having me on. I think Marshall is exceptionally generous with his praise, but I certainly will take that.
Well, in full disclosure, I do have to say that I chuckled when I saw that Marshall was acknowledged in the beginning of the book in the acknowledgments. You said, let's see, forget the cable talk shows. When you want to hear the straight dope on politics with a lot of insight and even more laughs, try to eavesdrop on Cam Edwards and Marshall Manson when they get together over Guinness's at Union Street in Old Town Alexandria. That's a wonderful tribute as well. And Cam Edwards, some of you may know, he is the host of the program on NRA News. He's on every evening for NRA News, and I was, on his program last night, and he turned green with envy, Jim, when I told him that you were going to be my guest tonight. He said, I got a hold of you before he could. So,
I was going to say, the thing is, I'll probably be crashing on Cam's couch for a good portion of my book tour. So Cam will get to see all of me that he can stand fairly soon.
Okay, good. Well, he actually gave me some questions to ask you, so I think he was trying to stump you, but I doubt he can. Let me start by asking you what your motivation was for writing the book.
Sure. I think after 2004, we saw a really historic victory by President Bush and the Republicans gaining seats in the Senate and House, which very, very few people expected. And we saw a kind of an interesting interpretation come out of it. A lot of people believe that this election was decided on cultural issues, a lot of talk about red state values. And in places like the New York Times and other kind of media elites, the attitude was sort of, well, The issue of gay marriage brought the hicks out of the hills, and they all voted for Republicans, and that's why John Kerry was not elected president. That struck me as very wrong-headed. I'm not denying that social issues were very important that year, but if you look at the real huge difference between the 2000 elections, which was, you know, right down to the wire, and 2004, which was much more decisive, I think you get a very simple three-numeral answer. It was 9/11, and it was the reemergence of the national security issue. In a way that we really hadn't seen since probably the height of the Cold War.
Well, in the book you write that many conservatives were born on the morning of September 11th, 2001. This is one of the things that Cam, the question that he had, and that is it true that conservatives are more interested in national security, and if so, why?
It's a very good question. I think that this may actually go back to people's cultural values, but by and large, conservatives do not have any quibbles with the concept of evil. Conservatives don't spend a lot of time reacting to something like 9/11 and asking, why do they hate us? Conservatives just accept that people like Osama bin Laden hate us and they want to kill us, and that's the way things are, and we have to kill these guys before they kill us. On our friends on the left side of the aisle tend to have a little bit more of, oh, what did we do? How did we provoke this? What can we do to prevent these people from getting so mad at us? It's a very different reaction. And it's actually an interesting kind of an attitude of, if we stop doing something that provokes them, further attacks will not happen. It actually is almost a way of asserting control over a circumstance which, to be perfectly honest, we don't have perfect control over. It doesn't, you know, we saw what 19 guys can do with a bunch of box cutters. So I think, to a certain extent, conservatives woke up that day. And the Republican Party has always been seen as a hawkish one, particularly since about the Vietnam in the 1960s. And then, you know, Reagan talked a great deal about this. The contrast between, say, Ronald Reagan and Jimmy Carter, and the way the two confronted the Iranian hostage crisis in 1980 was a very illustrative event of the extreme contrast between the two parties and the attitudes that they take into a crisis. So I think that for a lot of, actually, there were a lot of people who were probably apolitical or non-political before 9/11, and that when, you know, after 9/11, they woke up and all of a sudden they realized that these were truly life and death issues. And once they started following them, we saw things in President Bush that we hadn't necessarily seen before that day, a certain determination, a certain hard-headedness. And certainly, I think the contrast that I love is, you know, the 1990s were an era of I feel your pain politics, of Bill Clinton reaching out to soccer moms. After 9/11, we're in the Dick Cheney era of I want to inflict some pain politics. We kind of want a guy like Dick Cheney who's going to be, you know, Dick Cheney's not a warm, fuzzy guy. He's actually a little bit cold-blooded, but we kind of like that. We like the fact that this guy is going to be relentless and you know, very hard-headed in defending U.S. interests. So,
well, you mentioned
I hope that kind of addresses some of your questions.
Oh, absolutely, it does. And you mentioned soccer moms, but throughout the book, you refer to a different, and maybe it's the same block of voters, but you refer to them as security moms. Can you share with the listeners what you mean by that and what role that the security moms played in the 2004 election, and do you think they will play the same role in 2008?
Very good question. Exactly. I guess you saw in the 1990s, pollsters using this phrase, soccer moms, to describe mostly suburban women, mothers who you could kind of see them driving around in a minivan.
Or a white suburban.
Often their top issue was education. Health care was a very big issue to them as well. And generally, these were voters who wanted government to do things for them. And conservatives found themselves in a bit of a quandary when it came to appealing to this demographic, that these women wanted government to be active. They wanted government to go out and solve problems in their communities. And so you saw everything from Bill Clinton's proposal for school uniforms to proposals for midnight basketball and youth programs and all of these really micro-initiatives. I think a lot of conservatives' instincts was this isn't really a duty for the federal government. Well, all of a sudden, after 9/11, and I guess I should kind of backtrack and talk about the supreme impact that 9/11 had on parents, particularly those living on the East Coast. The timing of the attacks occurred so that many, many parents had dropped their kids off to school and were on their way home or maybe just arrived home and they heard on the radio or turned on the TV and they saw these awful events happening in New York City and then at the Pentagon right across from Washington, D.C., and all of a sudden, they rushed to take care of their kids. Their first instinct was, "I have to get my kids to safety."
Right, and you talk about that in the book, and it gave me an uncomfortable feeling because one of the things that you talked about was these interviews with these parents that had to, you know, unconsciously, I think, make a decision when they have multiple children which school to go to, where are they going to go first, and it left me sitting thinking, "Oh my gosh, you know." Almost like, are you picking favorites if you choose to go to the elementary school first or the middle school first? I mean, I know I digress from your point, but it really was.
You know, that's the exact moment. It was very weird that we, America's had tough days and horrific events in its past, but this was really kind of the first nationwide traumatic moment in which each one of us was worried about our own, the safety of our loved ones. And you know that on the head that, you know, for the way it's described in a focus group is, a mother saying that she felt like someone put a gun to her head and, you know, made them pick which child she wanted to save first. And so there, you know, this clearly, for most people, is the most traumatic moment of their lives, and God help you if you've had a more traumatic one. And so many parents went into the elections following that saying, look, before I cared about health care, before I cared about education and the environment and all these other issues, but my top issue is making sure that my leaders will make sure this never happens again, that I have never put in this awful feeling of what do I do, how do I keep my kids safe, which one do I pick up from school first. And that's, you know, they went down the list. And then, you know, in most races it has been, they see the Republicans as being tougher on these issues. And certainly the contrast between George W. Bush, smoke them out of their holes, wanted dead or alive, versus John Kerry and the global test, illustrated two contrasting opinions, and Americans came down pretty clearly on which one they preferred.
All right, I'm going to move off that subject just a little bit, but you've given me a first in doing my book interviews, I have to tell you, Jim. In the introductory chapter, you present a question. It's the first time the author actually gave me a question from his own book that I got to ask him. So hopefully you know the answer. But in the first chapter, you ask, doesn't the souring public mood on Iraq show that Americans are tired of war and have lost faith in the Republican Party's ability to protect us from terrorists?
Sure. But this is one of those, the reason that that's in the introduction is, you complete a draft of a book, and then the news environment changes a bit as it's going through the editing process, and you want to make sure it stays relevant. It is tough to remain focused on the war on terror 24/7, month after month, year after year. And, of course, we can't put our lives on hold. We do have to move on with our lives, and we do have other issues that that need our attention. And so from time to time, you'll see both Washington and the rest of the country kind of get focused on some issues that are just secondary and some issues that are just kind of frivolous, and sometimes it'll be something like
oil prices,
the Valerie Plame investigation or something.
Right.
And then the American attention kind of, deep down, I think we'd all, the Americans are kind of these benevolent isolationists. We really wouldn't mind if the rest of the world just went away and stopped dragging us into their problems. But unfortunately, it's not going away. And unfortunately, we learned on 9/11 that all of a sudden what happens in Afghanistan and Pakistan can have a huge impact on our lives and a sudden deadly impact in our lives. So we do have to care about these things. So generally it takes something, and I think probably the foiled plot to bomb airliners in London was an interesting wake-up call we saw right around the end of August. It's periodically we forget about these things for a while, and then something happens in the news that brings it back to us. Sometimes it's a Bin Laden tape, sometimes it's a foiled attack or a successful attack in a place like Amman, Jordan, or the Madrid train bombings, or the London subway and bus bombing of last year. And then all of a sudden we're forced to confront terrorism again, both, physically in our confrontation with terrorists, but also kind of mentally in a sense of recognizing the dangerous world that we live in. So I guess it's one of those things where it's inevitable at some point it will fade from our attention spans, and it will fade from our top priority. But inevitably, events will bring it back until the war on terror ends. And sad to say, I don't think it's going to end anytime soon.
Well, at the end of the book, you write that today is not September 10th, 2001, and then that day and all of its normalcy will not come again for a long, long time. Jim, do you think it'll ever come? I mean, even if we win this war on terror, do you think we'll ever get back to a sense of normalcy? And, I mean, what I'm referring to is that at one point in the book, you write about how, what you've talked about, how the events of any given day are big news, and all of a sudden, we get that little tinge in our mind that terrorism is raised, whether you hear about an accident at a chemical plant, or we just heard about a gas leak in New Jersey, or the latest on spinach and the E. coli outbreak. And again, in the back of our minds, we're thinking, oh my gosh, is it another terrorist activity? Are we ever, do you think, going to be able to lose the ability to separate? And I'm going to ask you to hold your answer till we come back from this break, if you will.
Okay, no problem.
Okay, we'll be right back after this break. Please stay tuned.
Saturn of Pensacola is proud to announce that the exciting lineup of 2007 vehicles is here. From the economical and fuel-friendly Ion to the roomy minivan, the Relay, Saturn of Pensacola has what you need. Safety and reliability are hallmarks of the Saturn lineup, and now European styling is added to the mix with the extraordinary Saturn Aura. You have to drive this car to believe it. Come see the entire lineup of amazing yet affordable vehicles today. Saturn is more car for the money, and it's your money. That's why you should drive a Saturn. Saturn of Pensacola, Highway 29, Car City.
Does your business have as many customers as you'd like, or would you like more? At WEBY, we've got thousands of listeners. Many need to buy what you're selling, but do they know about you? Advertising on WEBY is very affordable, and it really works.
This is Denise McDonald of the Open Roads Florist in Roseville. I know our radio ads work because people keep asking us if they can lick the spoon, a phrase we only use in our WEBY commercials. For beautiful flowers and gift baskets, come see us. For beautiful advertising, call Mike Bates at WEBY Radio.
If you want more customers for your business, call WEBY for information at 983-2242. You can directly deliver your message to our listeners. Talk radio is not background noise. Our listeners actively listen to the radio, which means they actively listen to your commercials. And most importantly, they respond. Call us to discover just how affordable and effective radio advertising on WEBY can be for your business.
Help your business grow with effective advertising on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio.
Do you have too much month at the end of your money? Kutch's Gun and Pond can help. If you need some quick money, come to Kutch's Gun and Pond to get top dollar on pond goods. Kutch's will offer money on many different items, but guns, jewelry, and musical instruments are what's preferred. All transactions are private and confidential. Kutch's Gun and Pawn on Stewart Street in Melton, 2.25 miles north of the Burger King. It's easy to get to. If you have too much month at the end of your money, don't worry, because you also have Kutch's Gun and Pawn.
WEBY.
September is Library Card Sign-Up Month, so stop into any Santa Rosa County Library to sign up for the smartest card of all, a library card. It's your ticket to a world of opportunity and to quality family time. Libraries have always been places where families come together. The Santa Rosa County Library System includes the Navarre Library, Gulf Breeze Library, Milton Library, and Jay Library. So bring the whole family and get a library card. It's free. Get it. Use it together at your library.
Now, back to your turn on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. The phone lines are open, so call in and join the conversation at 623-1330.
We're talking with Jim Garrity. He's contributing editor at National Review, and he's the author of a recently released book. It's called Voting to Kill, How 9/11 Launched the Era of Republican Leadership. And right before break, I asked him a question whether or not we will ever have that sense of normalcy back that we had before September 11th. Jim, what do you think?
That's a terrific question, and I've been mulling it over during the break here. And I think it'll be interesting to see what things are like on the 10-year anniversary. I'm hoping by that point, you know, bit by bit, we really do chip away at al-Qaeda, and we really have. I believe on the 5-year anniversary, General Hayden, the head of the CIA, announced that there have been, I think he said 5,000, I'm sorry, I want to say 5,000 terrorists have been captured or killed since the beginning of the war on terror. And I calculated it out, and it came to something in the neighborhood of 3 a day. So the great news is that if you're hearing this at dinner, we'll have another one by breakfast. And so it's one of those things, it's interesting to think about how, like, we feel like our lives have changed. But if you think back to the way you felt that first week after September 11th, you know, that first couple of weeks of September, you know, many of us expected that our lives would not be as normal as they are now. You know, all kinds of talk about biological weapons and chemical weapons and whether, you know, the airlines would ever get back to normal or something. And what's interesting is you wake up most mornings, and while, yes, we do have this fear in the back of our minds, it is only a fear in the back of our minds. We're not looking at every day the headlines for some terrible new death toll on our own soil. You know, one of the fascinating things that I touch on very briefly in the book, and kind of wish I could go into more, was the mysteriousness of the anthrax attacks. Periodically you'll hear people saying, oh, I hope we never get hit with biological weapons in this country. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, we did. It's kind of just disappeared down the memory hole.
Right.
That somebody out there, maybe it was al-Qaeda, maybe it was somebody domestic, you know, it's odd that 5 years later it remains such a mystery. But we've seen, you know, kind of glimpses of the very worst that terrorism could do, and it hasn't happened so far. So my guess and my hope would be at some point, maybe 5 years from now, maybe 10 years from now, we reach that point of feeling like we've really, you know, won the war on terror and demonstrated that, you know, this country can bounce back from just about any blow. It's interesting. One of the things I actually remember discussing with Marshall and Cam just recently was when we marked the 5-year anniversary of 9/11 earlier this month, I was struck by how angry I still am. And I think a lot of people, you know, the emotions, they go away for a while, and then you spend a day either going to a memorial service or seeing things or watching the news coverage, memorial coverage, and it all comes back, and it's not just sorrow, it's not just mourning. There's still a lot of anger at the people who had the audacity to do this and who still would like to do 10 times worse.
And I don't mean this to sound callous, but I mean, for anybody that's had to get on an airplane lately, You know, I mean, it just has changed remarkably. And I mean, I still, even putting aside the inconvenience of, you know, being searched and all the questions and having everything taken from you, basically walking on the plane naked, you know, the other side of it is still just sitting in that seat, and you can't help but inspect every single person that comes on the plane and, you know, in your mind, unfortunately, is running racial profiles and all of that. It makes things very difficult. I want to take a minute now to turn to another subject. In here, you talk very briefly about Hillary Clinton, and when you talk about security, and you suggest that Hillary Clinton is actually an example of a Democrat who gets it. Can you elaborate on that, and who do you think the Republicans should put up against her then in 2008, if in fact she is going to be the Democratic nomination?
Yeah, this definitely was not a conclusion I expected to come to when I set out to write this book. I am very tough on the Howard Deans, the Wes Clarks, the John Kerrys in that party. But I went looking for foolish or muddle-headed statements made by Senator Clinton since 9/11, and I really only came across one. And that really, you look at her speeches, you look at her voting record, there's not that much space between her and, say, Senator John McCain or George Allen. She pretty much is a down-the-line hawk, at least since 9/11, and I would suspect that she was as affected by the events and as traumatized the events as by any other mom who was trying to get in touch with her child that day. So this is by no means a wholehearted endorsement of Senator Clinton. There's still many, many issues that I disagree very strongly with her, but I think that the Howard Dean and the Daily Coast crowd might be surprisingly disappointed if she were to be elected President of the United States. Regarding the second part of that question, very good question, because I think she will be a very tough competitor. I think there are a good number of people on the Republican side who are underestimating how effective an organization she can put together, the level of excitement of electing the first woman president that will generate. You know, the Republicans have to bring their A game. I would say that there are four serious competitors right now, Senators McCain, George Allen, Governor Mitt Romney, and Mayor Rudy Giuliani. I see strengths of each one of those guys. I see weaknesses to each one of those guys.
Right.
Two or three that stand out. Rudy Giuliani obviously is Mr. 9/11. He earned the title America's Mayor and the adjective Churchillian for his leadership in those immediate days afterwards. And so he's one of those guys where we've seen him on the very worst day and what he can do in a crisis. So, you know, there'd be no questions of whether a President Giuliani could handle something like that. The other one, which is kind of a minor, a lesser degree of that, but is interesting, is Governor Romney's work organizing the 2002 Salt Lake City Olympics, which is very easy to forget how much fear of terrorism there was for those Olympics. And they really came off without any incident. He also did a nice job of getting them back to, you know, on budget and, you know, well-organized and stuff like that. But he's got a little bit more familiarity with these issues than you might expect from some governors. So, you know, it's not take away from Senator Allen. And obviously, McCain has some a very inspiring life story. But I think one of those guys are probably going to be the, you know, most likely to be at the top of the ticket in 2008.
Okay. The book is called Voting to Kill, How 9/11 Launched the Era of Republican Leadership. The book is out on shelves right now, isn't it, Jim?
It is, and available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com and all the usual.
Okay. Folks can get it, and they can read more of your work by visiting the National Review. Am I right?
That's correct.
And are you really going to come back from Turkey in 2008 if Hillary gets the nod and put up the Hillary Spot blog?
I will be back in early spring next year, and I'm hoping to start up, if not the Hillary spot, some sort of, you know, campaign spot on National Review Online. I've talked to the editors about that, but to do everything I did with the Kerry spot, same thing, just 4 years later.
Okay, again, in the words of my good friend Marshall Manson, it's arguably the most important political book of the year. Jim Garrity writes Voting to Kill, How 9/11 Launched the Era of Republican Leadership. Don't wait until 2008 to read this book. I think it's got a lot of lessons in there, particularly for those folks like me who are the security moms and want to know what we should be doing in 2006. Thanks again, Jim.
Renee, thanks so much for having me on.
Okay, we'll be right back after this.